We may well be 8 days away from the end of Roman's reign. This could be it, guys. We could be headed to the end of Roman Reigns' championship run. Next week, we're going to be celebrating 2 years since Roman Reigns took the championship. We could very well be nearing the end. Feels that way. They're certainly pushing Drew McIntyre as hard as they possibly can heading into Clash at the Castle. Tonight, though, the Bloodline laid a wicked beatdown on McIntyre to end tonight's show. So we're going to talk about SmackDown. We're going to talk about Rampage. Did watch Rampage tonight. You know, AEW, and part of the reason I did watch Rampage and I didn't skip it this week is they advertised that they were going to have exclusive footage on the show tonight of CM Punk backstage at Dynamite on Wednesday after the championship match that he had with Jon Moxley when he lost the AEW World title. We were going to get exclusive footage. What was he going to say? What is this going to be about? Maybe they were going to go ahead and announce the rematch. Punk was going to cut this impassioned promo and say, I can't go out like this. Jon Moxley, if you've got any balls on you, you'll give me one more shot in Chicago at All Out, because that's probably going to be the main event of that pay-per-view. There was nothing like that. We got absolutely none of that. What we got tonight was 30 seconds of footage, and it was all just much ado about nothing. And AEW tends to do this sometimes where they'll say, oh, we have exclusive footage, or we have an exclusive interview with Bryan Danielson or this person or that person. And it ends up being a 30-second or a 60-second video package. So that was a complete waste of time, which honestly is kind of becoming the story of Rampage on most weeks. You get some solid wrestling out of it, but it just doesn't feel, you know, somebody made the comparison actually in the chat a little bit earlier, and I think that that's actually kind of accurate, that this has become the Sunday Night Heat of AEW. Rampage, in many ways, has become what Sunday Night Heat became for WWE. And I think there's a lot of truth to that comparison. But this is your SmackPage review for Friday night, August the 26th. This is the final Friday night that we are spending together here in the month of August, which means that the summer is almost over. It's going to be jacket weather soon. We're going to be walking around wearing Gore-Tex. I'm going to be wearing my triple fat goose down jacket. I'm not looking forward to that. These New York winters are brutal. Of course, I'm sure the people who are tuned in who are living in Wyoming, Colorado, Montana, they're listening to this, they're watching this going, man, what a puss. He's complaining about the New York winters. Come on this way. No, thank you. Goal for tonight, I set the goal for 750. We need 750 likes to do Be the Booker, but only if you get us to 750. That is the goal tonight. And one more note for those who are not aware. Channel memberships. I want to thank all of our new channel members as well. Channel memberships. You are going to be able to purchase channel memberships through the native YouTube app on iOS, if not already, at some point in these next 2 weeks. So keep an eye out for that, because I know some people do everything from their phone. Everything's mobile. I don't believe that you're able to, at this point, do it through your phone or your mobile device, but you will in the next 2 weeks. So for the people who have asked about it, keep an eye out, because they're rolling that out for the YouTube app and iOS. So I just wanted to make mention of that. So we'll start out with SmackDown. We'll go in the order that these things aired tonight. So, of course, we'll start out with WWE. And we're already over 200. That's good. That's good. We might get to 750 by the time we're done. I don't know. It's up to you guys. We open with Ricochet one-on-one with Happy Corbin. Ricochet. Here's a match I feel like, I feel like I've seen this match before. A rare rematch here on one of these Triple H shows. So Ricochet caught Corbin with a corkscrew dive on the floor heading into the first commercial break. Corbin went on the offensive at that point. Ricochet ducked a clothesline, went for the recoil, but Corbin stuffed it. Yeah, well, let me pause there for a second. I do have to say something positive, though, about this, which is I do appreciate going directly into the action and not having a long, drawn-out promo segment. There are times where a promo segment is appropriate to open the show, but yeah, obviously WWE in the past has had a habit of abusing that and opening the show every week with these long, monotonous, you know, talking segments. When they go right into a match, that's never a bad thing. This is not necessarily the match I wanted to see, but at least they went right into a match. Ricochet caught Corbin with a knee strike. He went up top to hit the Shooting Star Press for the win. That is the condensed version of this. Yeah, I thought it was a decent match. Not exactly a hot start to the show, but Ricochet looks to be benefiting from the Triple H regime so far. He's getting TV time. He's being booked as a winner, not a loser. You know, he didn't win that Fatal 5-Way for the Intercontinental title, but he was part of that match, you know, last week. That great match. Love that match. So Ricochet so far seems to be a beneficiary of the new regime. Corbin, on the other hand, I can't say the same thing. And based on, you know, what they've been doing with him, it looks to me like maybe we are shifting back towards kind of a broke-ass Baron Corbin character again. I don't think, you know, honestly, you would watch his booking. He lost to the announcer guy. I know Pat McAfee is over and he's very popular, right? Most people love Pat McAfee. But he lost to the announcer at SummerSlam. And he's lost pretty much every other match that he's had recently. He lost the feud with Madcap Moss. He lost at SummerSlam. He lost again tonight. He also did not win that Fatal 5-Way last week. So Corbin has been a loser. He has been on a losing streak. And they even acknowledge it on commentary. He's in this downward spiral. And typically, you know, when I see something like this, I would say, boy, this doesn't bode well for this person when it comes cut time. Because there will be more cuts in the future. Just a matter of when, not if. And ordinarily, I'd say not a good sign for Corbin. But Corbin, I know, is well-liked behind the scenes. I don't think Corbin is on the bubble or anything like that. But I'm also not exactly sure what the hell they're doing with him. Unless they are reverting back to the broke-ass gimmick. Who knows? Maybe he's going to be the lone wolf again. Maybe the end result will be the lone wolf. Baron Corbin comes back. I wasn't much a fan of Baron Corbin, the lone wolf, then either. But obviously, they're breaking him down before they build him back up. In the back, Hit Row approached the Street Profits. I have to say, you know, I watched this show tonight. Street Profits were in a couple of different segments in the back. They never came out in front of the crowd during the first show. I don't know, because they taped two shows tonight. I don't know about the second show. When the show was over tonight, I asked myself, what was the point of the Street Profits even being there? Maybe they had a dark match or something, but what was the point? There was no point. They just showed up. They didn't do anything. So they had an interaction with the folks from Hit Row, and they acted like they had a problem with each other, but then they ended up getting along. They all agreed they wanted the smoke. Yeah, I'll bet they wanted the smoke. That's what that bus was for. And they all walked off together. They aired the first part of an extended Drew McIntyre video package. And this I liked. I think they tend to shy away. And I know AEW does. AEW has put together some incredible video packages over the last couple of years. Very few of them have seen the light of day on television. A lot of them are relegated to their Road 2 specials on YouTube. They put it on social media, and they should do that. But there have been some videos that are so good, it's a shame they can't take 3 or 4 minutes and air it on TV. But everything with the AEW shows, it's just boom, 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 right? They just have to keep going and going and going. That every now and then, it's nice to see a video like this get some time on TV. And they aired a dual-part video package tonight for Drew McIntyre to really build him up for Clash at the Castle. So this was part one. And they included footage from his early years in Scotland. I love that accent. They showed footage of his independent days, his early WWE run when he was the Chosen One. They cropped Vince McMahon out of it. We did not see any Vince McMahon introducing him as the Chosen One, but they did show him back when he was the Intercontinental Champion. He was looking very lean. He was very young, right? He thought he had the world by the balls. This guy's going to be a future world champion. Of course, it didn't work out that way during his first run. He talked about his career falling apart. It was around that time that his mother got sick with cancer. She passed away, and that sent him off the deep end. And he talked about being very immature. He said that he would achieve his potential eventually and return to WWE as a man. They cut back to the arena. Michael Cole said that McIntyre had to hit rock bottom before he could climb back to WWE. And he said that the redemption part of his story would air later on in the show. You watch a video like this. You watch this video that they aired here. And the fact that he's obviously got this big match coming up with Roman Reigns. They're going to be in the UK, big stadium show. You know, you look at all this and it's hard to imagine him not coming out of Cardiff as the champion. And not just the WWE champion or the Universal champion. He's challenging for both belts. They've made that very clear. This match is for the unified, undisputed WWE Universal champion. So the people who are twisting themselves into pretzels and playing gymnastics, trying to explain on my timeline, well, he's only going to win one title. He's not going to win both titles. He may not win any titles, but if he wins any titles, it's going to be both of them. And also, don't forget that Austin Theory is waiting in the wings. He's got that Money in the Bank briefcase. So every time we have a championship match like this, you've got the specter of Austin Theory hanging out there. That would take some balls. That would take some fucking balls on WWE's part to go to the UK big stadium show, have Drew McIntyre in there, win the title, and then get cashed in on. I don't think that's going to happen. But I'm watching this, and it's just, it's hard for me to see him going in there and not winning. I think it would be so detrimental to him to go in there and to lose like everybody else has, to get beat. I don't care if there's interference. It doesn't matter. They've built this up now to where if he goes in there and doesn't win, he's going to come out the biggest loser. One thing I am looking forward to, though, I am very much looking forward to him coming out to Broken Dreams. He's been teasing it a lot on social media to the point where if he doesn't come out to his old entrance music now, it's going to be a big disappointment. So I actually think he's going to have a very kick-ass entrance on the pay-per-view. In the arena, Karrion Kross's entrance plate. I thought he was coming out. He was in the arena. I don't know exactly where he was in, you know, position, but he was in the actual arena because you could hear him on the house mic. And it was him and it was Scarlett. Scarlett didn't say anything, and Cross said that McIntyre's story was beautiful, and he congratulated him. He said that maybe now it really is Drew's time. Or maybe not. He told him to take the moment in, think about it, savor it, because he could put his arm right through the back of his head anytime he wanted to. And he said all of his achievements at that point would mean nothing, and he closed by saying TikTok. Scarlett didn't say a word, but it's just every time I see these two together, Cross is the one doing all the talking. All she has to do is stand there, and it adds so much to the presentation. I just, again, the idea that anybody would have thought that these two were better off apart as opposed to together still blows my mind. So with Toxic Attraction out of the women's tournament, the women's tag team title tournament, Gigi Dolin got injured after their match last week when they won. Apparently it was a concussion. She forgot parts of the match. She really got her bell rung. I don't know exactly what spot it happened on. They're out of the tournament. So tonight we had a second chance fatal four-way match with Natty and Sonya, Nikki and Doudrop, Shotzi and Xia Li, and Dana Brooke and Tamina. We had Dana Brooke and Tamina on SmackDown tonight. The only team that got an entrance was Natty and Sonya, which pretty much gave away the winner. I mean, when you're the only team that gets an entrance, that pretty much says it all. I thought this was terrible. This was terrible, and I don't even put all the blame on the women for it, but this was terrible, as a lot of the matches in this tournament have been. It was too quick to mean anything. They tried to fit a 10-minute match into a 3-minute window. You can't do that. You cannot have a multi-person, multi-team match like this. Fatal four-way match in 3 minutes. You just can't do it. You cannot have a good fatal four-way match in 3 minutes. It's just not possible. So they were rushing and there was some sloppiness here. And, you know, and again, I know that they were doing another match later on in the night. The winner of this was going to have to wrestle twice because they would have to wrestle Raquel and Aaliyah later on in the show. Even still. You can't be doing this. So Dana Brooke was setting up Nikki Cross for a superplex onto the pile of people outside the ring. Nikki landed awkwardly on her leg on the way down. I thought she was injured. She immediately clutched her leg, and Sonya had blind tagged herself in before the spot. Nikki didn't know this. So after Nikki took the bump, she got suplexed onto the pile. She's on the floor clutching her leg. Sonya comes over, grabs her, rolls her into the ring, and pins her. And just like that, Natalya and Sonya Deville pick up the win. A few segments later in the show, Natty and Sonya were in the back. They were cutting a promo on Aaliyah and Raquel. And in the background during the promo, you could see Nikki and Doudrop. And they were having a very intense argument about something. We couldn't pick up on exactly what was being said. This has been a hallmark of Triple H so far. We've seen this on Raw with a lot of the weird stuff going on in the back. Remember when they had the car accident in the parking garage a couple of weeks ago? It was never acknowledged. Kevin Owens was in the foreground cutting a promo. Meanwhile, we're looking in the back. Funny enough, Nikki and Doudrop were standing by the car. I don't think it means anything, but they were standing by the car in the background. So, like, Kevin Owens is cutting this promo, and I'm just thinking, wait a minute. We had a little fender bender there in the background. So this is the way they've been shooting a lot of these backstage segments, where it just feels like there's other things going on that you have to kind of pick up on, like little Easter eggs. So they were having some kind of an argument, and it looks like their partnership is either coming to an end, or they're picking up with the angle that they started a few months ago that they completely dropped, that Vince McMahon completely dropped, where Doudrop was trying to convince Nikki to get more serious. You know, enough with the superhero crap. She was trying to get her more serious. I don't know. It's either one or the other. Either way, whether this is a breakup or just a new phase of their team, the almost a superhero shit has got in. I mean, it's been dead for a while now. She changed the color of her attire from blue to black. Ooh, who gives a fuck? The gimmick is dead. Bring back crazy Nikki Cross. That's when Nikki Cross was at her best. That's when she was at her most entertaining. I would like to see a return to crazy Nikki Cross. Or if she wants to try to innovate in some way and change her character and try something new, anything would be better than coming out there every week and doing a superhero gimmick that you're not even really playing up anymore. She's not playing up any aspects of it. Yet she comes out there dressed like it's Halloween. So this is a good sign. It means that change is coming for Nikki Cross. But, you know, again, this has been a very lame tournament so far. And I stand by what I said before the entire tournament began. When they said that they were going to have a tournament, I was like, yeah, okay. Right? And then months went by, Triple H takes over, and all of a sudden we got the announcement of the tournament. But I said that I would take those titles and I would fucking burn them and just get rid of them. And I still feel the same way. There's been nothing in this tournament that's made me go, wow, this is a great sign of what we can expect with these women's, you know, tag team titles. And they've really beefed up the division. No, I mean, it's just titles for the sake of having titles around. And these matches, like tonight, was a perfect example of it. And again, I don't put all the blame on the women. They went out there, they were told that they had 3 minutes, and they were trying to get their shit in. That does not make for good television. I don't see how anybody could watch this tournament so far and be excited about any of this. There's no reason to be excited for it. And not even Sasha and Naomi, who should be back in the next few weeks, not even Sasha and Naomi, God bless them. I mean, they're so passionate about these women's tag team titles. I have no fucking clue why. But boy, are they passionate about them. Not even Sasha and Naomi are going to be able to save this shit. Sheamus was out with Ridge Holland and Butch. Butch was back. Butch the Paperboy was back tonight. Sheamus talked about how he and his buddies would be drinking pints after he beats Gunther to become the Intercontinental Champion at Clash at the Castle. Walter and Ludwig Kaiser made their entrance to join them in the ring, and Sheamus called Walter, said he calls himself the Ring General. He goes, I am the Ring General. And Sheamus listed off all the legends that he has beaten over the years, Roman Reigns and John Cena and Randy Orton, Triple H. He said, nobody has had banger after banger after banger like he has. At one point, he paused because he wanted the crowd to say banger, and they didn't. Pat McAfee on commentary was like, oh, I heard them. Like, no, you didn't. He was waiting for them to say it. They never did, and so he said it instead. But not untrue. Sheamus has been one of the unsung heroes of this company ever since. I think back to those pandemic shows, man, and there were a few people who stood out. You know, Bayley was one of them. Asuka, early on, they really leaned on her, especially in the empty performance center to make a lot of noise. But I said, you know, Sheamus, man. Sheamus would go out there, and he was cranking out these great matches on TV. And he really, I still feel like he doesn't get the full credit he deserves. So when he goes out there and talks about banger after banger after banger, it's true. He's had a bunch of them this year alone on television with Drew McIntyre. And you don't think when he goes to Cardiff next week that he and Walter are not going to tear that fucking place down? It's the match I'm looking forward to the most. I'm looking more forward to that than the main event. I mean, think about the card so far for Clash at the Castle. We don't know all the matches yet. We know Roman and Drew. We know Liv Morgan, who is not on the show tonight. Liv Morgan and Shayna Baszler. We know Sheamus and Walter. Is that it? Oh, we have the six-woman tag. We have Bianca, Alexa, and Asuka against Bayley, Dakota, and Io. I think that might be it officially so far. So this is the match I'm looking forward to the most. He told Walter that he has something he wants, that being the Intercontinental title. And Sheamus promised that he would drag the title off of Gunther's lifeless body and into the belly of the Red Dragon. So then it was Walter's turn. He said Sheamus is a man to be respected, but he is nothing like him. He said that he would teach Sheamus what violence really means. He would chop Sheamus' chest to bloody bits. And he would crush his soul, his spirit. He said that he will break Sheamus. I will break you. He will break this man. A Clash at the Castle. So then Butch was like a rabid dog. He attacked Kaiser. They start brawling. Sheamus and Walter are standing there. They don't flinch. They don't move a muscle. They're just standing there. They're staring at each other the entire time. These two guys are brawling. Ridge Holland gets involved. Kaiser clotheslined Holland out of the ring. Kaiser returned to the ring. He fought with Butch a little bit more. Again, these two were just standing there having a staring contest. Finally, at the end, they each held back their men. And then Walter left with Kaiser, and that was the end of the segment. I thought this was very good stuff. Very basic stuff. Get these guys in the ring face to face. Get people excited. Let them know what they're in for next Saturday. I almost said Sunday. It's next Saturday. Don't forget, the pay-per-view is next Saturday, 1 o'clock Eastern. It's like the Saudi show. It's right in the middle of the day. But yes, I'm very much looking forward to this. Backstage, we went from a good segment to a great segment. This was the best stuff right here. This middle part of the show. This really was where SmackDown shined tonight. We go from the Walter and the Sheamus stuff to the Bloodline. And I raved about the backstage interaction last week with Sami Zayn and Roman Reigns. We got more of it, thankfully, tonight. This has become, in the span of 2 weeks, this has become my favorite thing on any wrestling show, is the interplay between Sami Zayn and Roman Reigns and the rest of the Bloodline. Sami is knocking on Roman's dressing room door. The Usos are here this week because they didn't have to worry about getting over the border. So they open the door and they joined him in the hallway. Hey, what are you doing here? Why are you knocking on the door? And Sammy thought that Roman might want to see him. Jey Uso was being a dick, as he usually is. He was being a complete dick to Sammy. Jimmy was being nice. Sammy assumed that Roman would want to see him, and Jey was telling him to get lost. All of a sudden, though, we hear Roman's voice in the background, and he tells Sammy to come on in. Sammy walks into the locker room, and he takes a seat next to Roman while the Usos stood behind him. And Roman asked him how he was doing, or he asked Roman how he was doing. But then Roman wanted to know how he was, and Zayn said, well, you know, my jaw is still sore from last week. That's when he took the bullet for Roman at the end of the show, and he ate that Claymore kick from McIntyre, kicked him right in the face. Roman said that you lost in the Intercontinental title match last week. Sammy talked about how I can bring the championship to the Bloodline. And Roman said you lost. And Sammy said, well, yeah, technically I lost, even though I was injured during the match. He goes, yeah, I lost. Roman said, but you know what? Sometimes bad things happen so that we can redeem ourselves. And Sammy got a big smile on his face, and he said, that's exactly how I see it. I see it the exact same way. Reigns told Sammy he didn't forget what he did for him last week when he was all alone at the end of the show, and he appreciated Sammy helping him out. Reigns said that that's something that family would do. And Sammy said, that is something that family would do. You're absolutely right. And as he said that, he kind of looked, he turned around and looked over at Jay, which I love. I thought that was fucking hilarious. He said that Roman can count on him for anything. And Roman said, well, that's good because I need you for another favor. And he told Zayn that he needed Drew McIntyre occupied and distracted tonight. And Sammy said, well, I have a match with him in the main event. I have a match with him later on tonight. And you couldn't have asked for a better person for the job. And Zayn said that he would get inside McIntyre's head. He would throw down a blanket while he was in there. He would have a picnic. He would do a dance. And all of a sudden, he starts doing this dance, a little dance while he's sitting in his... I don't even know what he did, but like I'm doing the shanky shuffle here. But he starts doing a dance in his seat. And this was the best part, right? Because he's being completely ridiculous. As he starts doing this dance, right? He's doing this dance in his seat. We see Jey Uso. And Jey obviously hates Sammy. And every time he is on camera with this man, he's got this pissed off scowl on his face. But when Sammy started dancing in his chair, Jey, he cracked. That was like me when I read that super chat last week where I just lost it. He had to cover his mouth, like he broke him. He broke this man. I was thinking, send for the man. He got to Jey Uso. He got him. Jey could barely contain himself. Sammy said, you know, could be a bonding moment if all of us were to be out there together later tonight. And Roman said, well, that sounds good and all, but I would be extremely distracting. You've got the main event tonight on this show. This is your night. This is all about you. I shouldn't be out there distracting from the greatness of Sami Zayn, basically, is what he was saying. Sammy agreed, and he thanked Roman for his time, and he went to go leave. And Jimmy wished Sammy luck, and Sammy did this completely absurd handshake. Then he went to go do the same handshake with Jey, and Jey just pointed at the door. And out he went. They're two for two with these segments. I thought this was another excellent segment. I cannot get enough of these. I am addicted to these segments. And look, the character work from everybody involved, including the Usos, you know, especially Jey and the stuff with Jey and Sammy, everything about this has just been spot on. It has just been fantastic. And it's great, too, because usually Paul Heyman is the one who's around and he's doing a lot of the talking for the Bloodline. With Heyman gone for now, he'll be back soon, but with Heyman gone, they had to find a different approach when it comes to these verbal segments with the Bloodline. Sammy has stepped in, and he has just taken the entire thing over. It's been fantastic. It's one of those little Easter egg things that I picked up on during the segment. I love how, if you go back and watch it, Sammy is wearing the older white Bloodline. It's a black shirt, but it's got like white lettering and a white image on it. The white Bloodline shirt, like that fans would buy at the arena. Roman and the Usos are wearing the newer red Bloodline shirt. So it's almost like he's, you know, he likes to think he's part of the group. He's an honorary Us and all this stuff, but he's not even wearing the same shirt as the rest of them. I just thought that was a nice little touch. It's the little things sometimes. It's the little things. So I love this. We had Natty and Sonya against Raquel and Aaliyah, semifinal match in the women's tag team title tournament. Bayley, Dakota Kai, Io Sky, they came to the ring before the match, and Bayley did guest commentary to annoy Michael Cole. This was marginally better than the earlier match. The earlier match got 3 minutes. This one got about 8. Natty had the early advantage. Aaliyah fought back. Natty hit a Michinoku driver on the floor. That took Aaliyah out of the match. That basically left Raquel all by herself, 2-1. Rodriguez fought Deville and Natalya on her own. She caught Deville and Natty with a double suplex. Heels regained control, but Raquel fought back. She hit her corkscrew elbow on Sonya for a near fall. Raquel broke free from the sharpshooter and eventually hit the Tejana Bomb for the win. When the match was over, Aaliyah jumped back in the ring to celebrate with Rodriguez. So here is where we are. I'll put the brackets up here on the screen. This is what we have built to here in the finals. We have come to the finals of this tournament. Raquel and Aaliyah are going to lose to Dakota Kai and Io Sky on Raw this Monday night. And thankfully, this will all be over. They have designated Aaliyah as the clear weak link of the team. And I expect her to be the one who takes the losing fall in that match because I think they're going to want to protect Raquel as much as possible, which is really what they did tonight. I mean, they won tonight, but Aaliyah went out. It was 2-1. Raquel was able to overcome the odds. She's the one that they're pushing. But I don't think it's going to save them on Monday. It's pretty clear who's going to walk away with those tag team titles, and it's going to be Dakota and it's going to be Ia. There's absolutely no reason to put the tag team titles on Raquel and Aaliyah. Zero. Zero reason to put the tag team titles on them. So it seems pretty clear who's going to walk away with the win here in this tournament. Maximum Male Models. We're in the middle of a photo shoot in the back when Hit Row's bus, or what we assume to be Hit Row's party bus, started playing their theme song. I mean, it's only appropriate to assume that it's their bus if they're playing their theme music. So Max Dupri was furious about this. He was, you know, obviously very distracted by all this, and Maxine had a solution. She left, and when she came back, she had Los Lotharios with her. She was the one who wanted to bring them into the group when Max, you know, if you remember a few weeks ago, basically rejected their application. She's smitten with them, and I don't know if they're officially part of this crew now or not, but she brought Los Lotharios in. They ended up later on, they all vandalized the bus. They wrote "Hit Row sucks" on the side of the bus. They were very proud of themselves. Hit Row then showed up. They weren't on the bus. They showed up. And this all led to a challenge to a match next week. Top Dollar then revealed that this isn't our bus. And they went to go walk away. The bus door swings open, and out come the Street Profits. And the heels realize the mistake they've made, and they end up running away. Again, I have no idea why we needed the Street Profits on this show. The New Day was back after getting their asses kicked for weeks by the Vikings. Kofi Kingston was back. Xavier Woods was in the ring in a wheelchair. He had a blanket over his legs. This was as serious as we have seen the New Day probably ever has it been that long? Probably 8 years. Has it been 7 or 8 years the New Day has been a thing in this company? I think it has been. We're coming up on a decade soon of the New Day in WWE. In all of these years, I've never heard them or seen them as serious as I did here in this segment. They were using their serious, normal voices here in this segment. They were talking like normal human beings, and they were addressing the Viking Raiders, and they talked about the Viking funeral from last week's show where they were in the woods somewhere, and they burned the Bootio's box, and they burned their t-shirts. Woods and Kingston teased that this could very well be the end. Like the way they were talking, they wanted you to believe that maybe this was going to be some kind of announcement about the end of the New Day. Eric and Ivar interrupted, and Ivar said that it made them sick to see them groveling like wounded animals. Ivar said that sometimes the best thing to do for a wounded animal is to just put it down. They dropped their shields, and they made their way into the ring, and Kofi was trying to hold them back. Come on, let's talk about this, right? Xavier's in the wheelchair. So Kingston draws them away from Woods, and now they have their backs turned. And sure enough, Xavier Woods, he rises from his wheelchair. It's like Linda McMahon at WrestleMania. When zombie Linda stood up from the chair that Vince McMahon, he had taken her out of her wheelchair and propped her up on a chair in the corner. It really is one of the great WrestleMania moments when Linda rises from her chair and you see all the people in the Astrodome. As Linda rises, so too do all the fans in the crowd. And she ends up kicking Vince in the balls and everybody goes nuts. It's a great moment. So Xavier rises from his wheelchair and he reveals 2 kendo sticks that were stuffed inside of his walking boot. we got a big sexy reference on commentary. I don't know how many of you heard that from Pat McAfee. He got a big sexy reference in there. And the first thing I thought of, was that segment from WCW Monday Nitro where Nash, I don't even remember the context of this. I don't even remember the angle. I just remember Nash is in the wheelchair sitting outside the ring. He's looking up at someone in the ring. And he also has like a blanket draped over his legs. And all of a sudden, he just pulls off the blanket and he stands up. And we find like a pair of fake legs that are there. And he just stands up. It's the funniest fucking thing. So that's what this was a play off of. And I like that Pat McAfee gave Kevin Nash the nod there for that. So Woods tossed the kendo stick to Kofi. And they beat the Viking Raiders with them until they fled the ring. So next week on the show, we're having a Viking rules match, which we were told means basically no rules. They're doing it on SmackDown, not on the pay-per-view. It's basically what they did before SummerSlam. They gave us Drew and Sheamus on TV instead of doing it on the pay-per-view. Backstage, the Usos approached Sami Zayn as he was getting ready for his big main event. And Jimmy said that Roman doesn't talk like that to just anybody. He told Zayn that this was a big opportunity for him. Jay said that Zayn blew it last week. Don't blow it again. Again, he was getting all up in his face. And Sammy was questioning, why do you got to be so negative? What's with all the negativity? I'm trying to get ready for this match and mentally prepare for my big battle here, and you're getting all up on me, and you're beating up on me, you're being all negative. What's up with that? So Jay was yelling at him for talking behind his back last week, and he told him, you better take care of business tonight. They are the second part of the McIntyre video package. This focused on his redemption story, winning the WWE Championship. He talked about being in the main event of the first UK stadium show in 30 years. I think Pat McAfee at the beginning of the show tonight said the first UK stadium show in 35 years. Maybe he misspoke. Either that or they have to exaggerate everything. It's exactly 30 years. Exactly 30. In fact, I'm planning on doing a watch-along for all of our channel members on Wednesday next week. It's the 30th anniversary of that SummerSlam show at Wembley Stadium. 30 years on the dot. So they talked about this being the first UK stadium show in 30 years. That's a watch-along for the main event, by the way, not the entire show. Talked about taking down Roman Reigns and fulfilling his destiny in front of 70,000 people. So officially, they have almost 66,000 tickets out for that show next weekend. If they don't hit 70, they're going to be pretty close. I think the actual paid attendance is around 48,000, so there's a lot of comp tickets on this show. But the building will be full. There's going to be a ton of people there. I'm actually very curious what kind of a set they have. Obviously, it should be done up as you know, like a castle of some kind. Hopefully, they'll have a nice set piece for it. And I'm looking forward to this show. I actually am. It feels like a big deal. I'm looking forward to this show. Because you know those fans. They're so starved for a big show like this. You get 65 or 70,000 of them in the building, they're going to be loud. I mean, think about the crowd we had in Montreal last week for SmackDown. You know, now imagine that magnified by 65,000. I am expecting and hoping for a rabid crowd in Cardiff next weekend. I hope all my UK people don't let me down. I'm going to be living vicariously through you. We had Drew McIntyre and Sami Zayn. McIntyre dropped Zayn with an early punch. Zayn came back, clipped McIntyre's knee. And Drew put Zayn on the ropes. He was going to go for a superplex. Sami, though, raked the eyes. And he performed a sunset bomb heading into the final break. Later on, the Usos ran down. They distracted Drew briefly. And when Drew turned around, he turned right into a blue thunder bomb for a near fall. Jimmy climbed up on the apron on one side and Drew knocked him off. Jay did the same thing on the other side. He got knocked off. And Sammy tried for a roll up. McIntyre kicked out. And then he caught him with the Claymore kick for the win. Here comes Roman Reigns. He slides into the ring. He beats up McIntyre. Drew manages to post him shoulder first, but the Usos attacked from behind. McIntyre made a comeback on them. Roman, though, catches him with a spear. Usos grabbed chairs, and they took turns wearing down McIntyre with these chair shots. I showed you before. There it is. I mean, that's the end result of all those chair shots. There were no kendo sticks involved here. There were no kendo sticks. That right there, what you see there mostly, is chair shots. And they beat the hell out of this guy with these chairs. Sent Drew to the floor, over the announce desk. They drove him into the barricade. Usos held him for Sami Zayn, who came charging in with the Huluva kick. Then the Usos hit McIntyre with the ring steps. They did everything but shoot this fucking guy. They put him back in the ring. Drew had welts all over his back. They rolled him in, and Reigns yelled at him. He said, "The top of the mountain is mine, and you won't ever have it until I am done with it." And he locked on the guillotine until Drew went out. They brought a chair into the ring. Roman placed the chair right over Drew's body. He sat down on it. He had one title on one shoulder, the other title on the other shoulder. And he looked dead in the camera, and he dared somebody to come take these titles from him. Like a boss. That is how the Bloodline closed out the show tonight. This was like a gang attack. That's what this was. They killed this guy. This was like a gang assault. And it reminded me, they had that great ending to SmackDown when the Usos won the tag team titles and they unified them when they beat RK-Bro. And they beat the hell out of Riddle. They beat the hell out of Randy Orton. So they've done a couple of really good, you know, violent beatdown angles with the Bloodline in these last, you know, couple of months. And it's weird, you know, I watch these shows the past few weeks and I just think there's no way that they could beat Drew in the UK. I mean, it feels like there's no way they can possibly do that. The way they're building him up, I mean, it would be like Lex Luger not winning the championship at SummerSlam. That's what it would feel like. He goes in there and loses. They're basically Lex Lugering him is what they're doing. And I just find it hard to believe that they're going to do that. But I'm not totally convinced that he's going to walk out with the... I'm not 100% convinced that he's going to walk out as a champion. I think he will if I had to make a prediction right here and now. And again, we'll see the go-home show next week. I think he wins the championship. But I can't tell you that I'm sitting here 100% convinced that they won't have some other finish in mind that tries to protect Drew, but Roman wins again. And they keep the titles on him for a little bit longer because he is the biggest star in the entire company. And even though I have reached my point where it's like, I mean, at this point, it's being, if he beats Drew, there's nobody else already set up. There's nobody else. They'll build somebody else up for it, but there really is nobody else kind of on deck in the on-deck circle ready to jump in there as the next number one contender. There's a story they could tell with Sami Zayn, but I think that's a longer-term story, or even Kevin Owens, but they've done that. And Roman has beaten everybody there is to beat. He's beaten Brock a whole bunch of times. Now, he hasn't had Lashley since Lashley went babyface, but I don't get the sense they want to go in that direction. So if you keep the title on him for several more months, I don't know that that's necessarily a good thing either, but I don't know. I keep coming back to Cody Rhodes and how the perfect story would be Cody making a comeback and being the one to dethrone Roman and take the championship, but can they hold off until April of next year? And that's assuming they don't get The Rock, which they seem to think there's a chance they'll get The Rock for a match. I'm not convinced of that, but I don't know. It's not necessarily what I would do, but I do think that he's had that championship long enough. How many more people can he kill? The problem is the Bloodline stuff is the best stuff on the entire show. You kill that and take that away. I mean, I guess Triple H is going to try to build his own stories up. But right now, it's not like you have that other big story you can really rely on. It's the Bloodline, and then there's this whole gap until they could really start building some more people up. But I thought that this was the weakest episode of SmackDown since Triple H took over. And it wasn't a bad show, but of the shows so far, this was the weakest of the SmackDown shows. Still overall a pretty decent show. They taped two episodes tonight, though. And it looks like they saved most of the good stuff for next week's show. They held back a lot on the show tonight. The Bloodline and the Sami Zayn stuff carried things again. And I like the Sheamus segment, but that was about it. So they taped two episodes tonight because they're going to be in Cardiff next week. Obviously, they're going to be flying over there for the pay-per-view. The lineup for the show next Friday, which, again, is a taped show, it's going to be a celebration with Roman Reigns celebrating 2 years as the champion. It was, believe it or not, 2 years ago when Roman Reigns came back. He was looking a little bit different. He got the new teeth. He was a new man. He had Paul Heyman with him, and he beat The Fiend and Braun Strowman. He took the championship from The Fiend. He has not looked back since. We have not had another champion since. This has been the era of Roman Reigns. This is the closest thing that we have had to a Hulk Hogan reign. Because Hogan, you know, the first time, Hogan had the belt for 4 years. This is the closest thing we've had to a championship run like that in 30 years, 30 plus, 35 years. It's been a long time. So he's going to be celebrating 2 years as champion next week. We're going to have Ronda Rousey's final judgment after she was arrested last week. Karrion Kross will make his in-ring debut. Hit Row takes on the Maximum Male Models. Butch goes one-on-one with the Sundance Kid, Ludwig Kaiser. And the New Day and the Vikings will have their Viking Rules match. So, I told you, that's a more loaded lineup next week than we had tonight. Now, over on the Rampage side, let's rampage on over to TNT. I want to just check and see where we are on the likes front. Remember, we got to get to 750 likes. If you guys want to be the booker, we're behind. 430, that's a good number, but it ain't 750, so let's get those likes up. But on TNT, we had a taped Rampage from Wednesday night, kicking things off with the Trios Championship tournament. House of Black taking on the Dark Order. Alex Reynolds was on the receiving end of an elbow from Malakai, and eventually Reynolds landed a spinning elbow. He got the tag to Preston Vance, cleaned house. 10, I guess we'll call him 10. Went for a full Nelson on Black. Black, though, went to go take the brace off 10's knee. All of a sudden, they played Miro's music, and out comes Miro. Buddy Matthews met him in the aisleway, and Brody King, he took both of them out. In the ring, though, as he took out the other members of the House of Black, this is distracting Malakai. He gets rolled up and pinned by Alex Reynolds. You had three men representing the House of Black, and they pinned Malakai. That's certainly a decision. That's a decision that they made. Not the decision that I would have made, but that's the decision that they made, that they had Malakai Black be the one to take the losing fall here. So next week now, it's going to be Dark Order against Best Friends. But we weren't done here yet, because after the match, House of Black beat the hell out of Miro until Darby Allin and Sting made the save and the heels bailed. So it played out the way that I expected to. You know, most of you guys were here with me last week when we talked about this, that House of Black has their issues with Miro. They've had their run-ins with Sting and Darby in recent weeks. Miro flat out said he was going to go after each member of the House of Black, and that's exactly what he did. And he ended up costing them the victory. That now sets up a trios match that they could add to the All Out card. It could be Sting, Darby, and Miro against Malakai, Buddy, and Brody. And the Dark Order now, they're going to face the Best Friends next week. They're going to beat the Best Friends. And they're going to go to the finals to wrestle Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks after they beat the United Empire on Dynamite this Wednesday. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay share a ring together. That's going to be a great match. Just the match itself is going to be fantastic on Wednesday. I mean, honestly, that's the kind of match that you would expect to see in the finals of this thing. We're going to get it in the semifinals next week. But Hangman Page is going to be with the Dark Order, and so the story is there to be told. And I'm expecting there to be some kind of an injury angle with one of the members of the Dark Order team where Hangman then steps in their place, or one of them gives up their spot to let Hangman wrestle for them so that he can wrestle in the match on pay-per-view. But it's going to come down to Omega and the Bucks against the Dark Order, and I'm sure Omega and the Bucks are going to be your first Trios Tag Team Champions. That's how I see this whole thing playing out. We went backstage to interview Hook, and Hook actually spoke. It was brief, but he spoke. He said he did see the video from 2.0, who laid out a challenge to him last week. I think Matt Menard is still hurt. So the challenge was from Angelo Parker. And he says he did see the video, but he doesn't care. And he walked off. And not 2 seconds after he walked off camera, here comes Menard and Parker, as if they were just standing off to the side. Where's he at? Where's he at? Lexi Nair says, well, he's right over there. And they're acting like, oh, you know, where is he? Where is he at? Where is he at? And they talked about wanting a taste of the FTW title, and that was the end of that. We had Wardlow defending his TNT championship in the open challenge against Ryan Nemeth. After Wardlow made his way to the ring, Sanjay Dutt's crew walked out on stage with Chris Sabin. No Alex Shelley, but Chris Sabin was there. Motor City Machine Guns are tagging with Jay Lethal at All Out to take on FTR and Wardlow. That's why Sabin was there. They came out. They didn't do anything. They just stood around. And we had Nemeth in the ring. He was running his mouth on the mic about Wardlow. Wardlow finally headbutted him to shut up. They were in Wardlow's hometown, by the way. They were in Cleveland. He headbutted him to shut him up. 4 power bombs later, the match was over. Lexi Nair interviewed Andrade El Idolo, Roosh, and Private Party in the back. Andrade told Private Party that losses have consequences. Of course, they lost last week to Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland. And he basically patted them on the shoulder and said, losses have consequences, and he walked off. No idea why these guys are still together. Powerhouse Hobbs is out next for a squash against Ashton Day. He gave this man a very bad day. He brutalized him with clotheslines and a big spine buster. After the match, Hobbs was looking up at the big screen. We saw QT Marshall in the factory, and sitting in a chair was Ricky Starks. And Marshall told Hobbs, look, we're going to make it up to you. We're going to get this guy for you. We're going to take him out. He was delivering on his promise. Ricky was in the chair. His mouth was all bloody. And Marshall took his watch off and wrapped it around his hand, and he popped him in the mouth with the watch. Ricky fell out of the chair and fell on the ground. And that was that. Lexi Nair was in the back, attempting to get an interview with Jade Cargill and the baddies. Layla Gray, who has been an honorary baddie. Layla Gray is basically like the Sami Zayn to Jade Cargill's bloodline. She likes to think that she's a member, but she's really not an official member. And Jade does not put up with any of her shit. So she tried to open the promo, and Jade was like, I don't think so. And she told Kiara Hogan to take out the trash. And she took Layla and they went off camera. She basically kicked her out of the group. And then she told Lexi, you can leave too. I don't need you. I'm going to look in the camera. And she threw down the gauntlet to Athena and said, you and me, September 4th at All Out for the TBS Championship, which is the only match they could make. Because I'm sure the match was going to be Chris Statlander against Jade Cargill. Even before the reports came out and Meltzer started talking about how that was the match that they were probably going to do. I've been telling you guys for weeks, I would put the title on Chris Statlander. I would have Statlander have been the person to end Jade Cargill's undefeated streak. She's a homegrown AEW talent that the people like. She can go. She was looking damn good in the ring ever since she came back from the knee injury. Everything was coming up aces for this woman until she got hurt again. And the only other person who has been feuding with Jade Cargill who would make sense to put her in the ring with would be Athena. And so now it's official. But as soon as she laid down the gauntlet to Athena, as if she was just standing right there, there's Athena. They don't even try to pretend. At least wait 5 seconds and then let the woman show up. Nope, she's right there. She's already on top of Jade before she could even get the next words out. And here come referees to break them up, and the match is official now for the pay-per-view. We had Sammy Guevara, who has been quite the controversial figure this week. Sammy Guevara, I'll have a lot more to say about the Sammy and Eddie Kingston situation. among all of the other situations that have been going on in AEW lately. Boy, it's a fucking mess, this company lately, feels like, behind the scenes. Sammy Guevara and Ty Mello against Ortiz and Ruby Soho. After the split screen break, we come back. Ortiz floored Sammy with a clothesline. He got the tag to Ruby. Ruby set up Ty for a superplex. And Sammy was going to try to break it up. He gets into the ring and he gets underneath Ruby and now has Ruby on his shoulders in the electric chair position. Ruby goes backwards and she ends up hitting a poison Rana. Takes Sammy over right on top of his head. Ty then comes off the top with a crossbody on Ruby for a near fall. Ruby hits Ty with the no future kick. She has the match won. Sammy pulls Ruby off of his wife. And Ortiz gets the tag. He brawls with Sammy in the corner. Meanwhile, here comes Anna Jay. She runs down to the ring and she grabs Ruby and throws her into the ring steps. Ortiz is distracted by this and he gets caught by the double jump cutter off the ropes by Sammy, and he pins Ortiz for the win. Ortiz got badly busted open. It was like right by his eye. It was on his face. Half his face was covered in blood. This was no paper cut. I didn't see how it happened. They didn't explain how it happened. They didn't show a replay of how it happened. It looked like he was bleeding before the cutter. So I don't think it was the cutter that did it, but I couldn't for the life of you tell you how he got cut, but he was bleeding bad. They aired highlights of Jon Moxley squashing CM Punk on Dynamite. This is the segment they were hyping up. Exclusive footage. Exclusive backstage footage of CM Punk after the big championship match on Wednesday. You're going to want to tune in for this. So I thought, oh, okay, well, we'll tune in. To be honest with you, I was on the fence about even covering Rampage tonight. That's what made me say, in case they announce something big, you know, plus I wanted to see the Ring of Honor title match, but, you know, especially with the Punk thing, we should cover Rampage tonight. What a mistake that was. Literally 30 seconds of footage is what we got here. They showed CM Punk in the back being helped by the trainers. He's hobbling on one foot. He says, I can't put any weight on the foot. So then he's sitting on the table. And he's explaining to the trainer that he doesn't feel anything other than his foot giving out. That's the only thing he felt in the ring, was that his foot gave out. And he said, that's not good, because that's the same thing I felt when I shattered the foot. And then they cut away, and that was the end of the segment. So we didn't learn a single thing. There was no promo from Punk. There was no indication of a rematch coming up at the pay-per-view next weekend. There was nothing. And I guess that's what they advertise, right? They said exclusive backstage footage. We got exclusive backstage footage, but they gave us the bare minimum here. This was a fucking waste, is what this was. I don't know what. I don't even know what the point of doing this was at all. I mean, I guess they thought they could rope people in. They wrote me in because I'm covering the show. I doubt it's going to make that big of a difference in the numbers. They could have just as easily put that on their social media. The segments that they should air on TV, they don't, and they exclusively keep it on social media. And then they have something like this, which they could have just thrown that on social media. Anyway, this was a waste. We didn't learn anything new. So then the main event was Claudio Castagnoli against Dustin Rhodes for the Ring of Honor World Championship. Still no television show or announcement of a television show for Ring of Honor. And so every now and then they'll throw out a Ring of Honor title match, and every 3 or 4 months we'll get a pay-per-view, and there'll be some kick-ass matches. And I think that's going to be the future of Ring of Honor going forward. I don't get the sense there's any real TV deal in the works. There may end up being some kind of a YouTube show. Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. But Ring of Honor, it's just sort of, I don't know, it's just sort of, it's sort of there, but in what form does it really exist at this point? So Arn Anderson was in Dustin's corner as his coach. William Regal came out to do commentary, which greatly upset Chris Jericho. So he got up and stormed off. And Regal took his spot at the announce booth. But then they brought out Caprice Coleman to join the announcers because it was a Ring of Honor match. And Caprice is very good. But I lost track of how many people. I have no idea how many announcers were out there for the main event. I know Jim Ross was still out there. I know Excalibur was still out there. So we had JR, Excalibur, Regal, and Caprice Coleman, at a minimum. But Tony Schiavone may have been there. I don't remember. We had at least four, maybe five people doing commentary. Regal was there too. Ridiculous. You don't need that many announcers. I'm sorry. You just don't. You do not need that many announcers on commentary. So after the final break, Dustin clotheslined Claudio out over the top rope. And then he caught him with a cannonball off the apron. Back inside, flying clothesline only got him two. Dustin hit a Hurricanrana off the middle rope and then hit a Code Red. Shout out to the Amazing Red for a near fall. Claudio took him down with a lariat. Then came the big swing. 10 revolutions later, he let go. He went for the cover. Dustin kicked out. Claudio locked on the crossface. Dustin managed to reverse out of it. Caught Claudio with a snap power slam. So then Dustin set up for what looked to be a pile driver. And I don't quite know what he was going for because he just sort of fell backwards. And then it almost looked like it was a power bomb that he gave up on. So I have no fucking clue what this was supposed to be. And even the announcers were confused. But the match went on. Claudio came off the ropes. He went for a leapfrog. Dustin did not duck. And his head got buried. His face got buried in Claudio's crotch as Claudio came off the ropes. And again, I don't know if this crotch spot was intentional or not. I think it was, but I'm not sure. It's possible it wasn't, and then they just sort of incorporated it into the match, and Excalibur was talking about whether or not the referee was going to call for a disqualification, but he didn't. I don't know. It was very weird. But then Claudio recovered, and he propelled Dustin up into the air, caught him with the pop-up uppercut, and he got the pin to retain the title, and Arn Anderson was very upset with Dustin. You know, look, Dustin can still turn it up in the ring. He's 53 years old. He still goes in there. He's doing Hurricanranas and Code Reds, and you know, when he wants to, man, he can go in there and he can move around. This was not as good as I was expecting it to be. This was disappointing. I was expecting more out of this match. You know, it was good, but not what I was expecting. I was expecting more from this. Now, I think we've got a whole bunch of live rampages. I know that the television schedule in October is going to be all screwy because you've got the baseball playoffs and everything going on. So even Dynamite, there's going to be 1 week where Dynamite, I think, is airing on Tuesday in competition with NXT. I think it's October 18th. But from what I understand, they're really trying to push and load up Rampage in October, and there may be a bunch of live Rampages. And I'm hoping that's the case. Maybe that will help make the show more must-see if the show is live, and if it's, you know, Tony Khan makes it a priority in the month of October, maybe we'll get some big matches out of it or big angles or something to make it more must-see, because right now, Rampage is anything but. And I go back to the analogy that somebody in the chat made earlier on. It's not a bad show, but it really has become the Sunday night heat of AEW. And it's not a show that's really, you have to go out of your way to watch it. Whereas there were a lot of weeks, you know, at the beginning where it did still feel like a special deal and a show that you didn't want to miss. And here we are now a year later, and that just isn't the case. Has it been a year or has it been over a year? I think it's been 2 years, right? When did Rampage debut? Was it last August or was it August of 2020? I don't remember now. I got to tell you guys something. I made a comment on the stream the other night. It might have been one of the super chats. And I think somebody asked me, like, you know, as far as like the AEW shows that I've been to, and I made the comment. I said that the last AEW show I went to, I know what it was because I'm going to Arthur Ashe next month. And I said that I haven't been to an AEW show since the very first one. I was at the first Double or Nothing in Vegas in May of 2019, so it's been a long time. And it was actually Noah, my buddy Noah, who, you know, was with me on the cruise, who pointed out that when we were on the Jericho cruise in 2020, they did, in fact, tape an episode of Dynamite. Now, I was adamant on the stream the other night that they didn't actually tape television, because I thought that they were going to come back next year in the following year cruise and tape television. So I knew they had matches on the ship, but I completely forgot about the fact that, in fact, it was taped for an episode of Dynamite, and I just totally blanked on it. So technically, the last AEW show that I went to was on the Jericho Cruise in 2020. But I feel like COVID has completely fucked up my sense of just time. I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one who feels like that, but it just has completely warped my entire timeline in my brain. But anyway, so yes, I was wrong when I said the other night that they did not tape television. In fact, they did. They didn't. In fact, I think MJF ended up in the pool, if I'm not mistaken. I think he got thrown into they had like a swimming pool on the top deck of the ship, and I think he got tossed into the pool. Anyway, let's check out the poll here. We'll start out with SmackDown. 62.7% thumbs up, 27% thumbs in the middle, and 10% thumbs down. So not as good as Raw, but positive score there. Way more thumbs up than thumbs down for SmackDown. The Rampage poll, I'm guessing, is not going to be as pretty. And it is not. 44.6% thumbs up, 30% thumbs in the middle, and 25.4% thumbs down. So SmackDown wins the night, which it does. And this was not even a great SmackDown. But SmackDown was the better of the two shows tonight. That is the absolute truth. I concur with our Twitter poll, folks. Again, you can vote at Solomonster on Twitter is the place to go for that. Yeah, it is, you know what? It is just like the Dynamite poll this week. The Dynamite poll on Wednesday was the worst Dynamite results that we've ever had. The lowest Dynamite results that we have ever had on Wednesday. Which, actually, I'm wondering if these might be the worst Rampage numbers. Yeah, they might be. These might be the worst Rampage numbers I've seen in the poll. But still more thumbs up than thumbs down. So that would, I guess, make it a thumbs up show. I guess that would make it a thumbs up show. All right, let's take a look at your super chats here. We are at, where are we at here? We're at 530 likes. So we're a little over 200 away. I don't know if we're going to make it tonight, guys. I don't know about Be the Booker. I thought we would book some ladder matches tonight. It doesn't look like it's going to happen unless we have a big turnaround. Like the Mets coming back, bottom of the ninth, grand slam, right? Maybe we could have some late inning theatrics here tonight. Thank you to everybody, by the way, who does Super Chat. It is the most direct way to support here on the channel. I very much appreciate all the love. So let's read your messages here and see what you guys thought of the show. Shinakuma, thank you for the $5 super chat from TV Tracks 2014 to my December 1st, 2014 mailbag question to Super Chatting. Solomonster is the man, the myth, the legend. Have fun tonight. Well, I don't know if Shin is in the chat, but thank you for that. I think you may have checked out early. Justin, $9.99, what happened to Paige VanZant with AEW? What happened to Bobby Roode with WWE? Paige VanZant, I think, has a bare knuckle fight coming up. She could still do those. It's in her contract. So she's focusing on that. Wrestling is not her priority. Bobby Roode is just a bit player in WWE. Whether or not Triple H wants to repackage him is up to Triple H. Triple H is the one who brought him into NXT. But I don't know how much of a priority Bobby Roode is to Triple H right now. That's kind of why a few weeks ago we were toying with what to do with Bobby Roode. And I saw that James Storm had made a comment on Twitter that, if he got the call, maybe you never know, right? He might be interested in going to WWE. And, you'd have to educate the audience because it's a TNA team. But having a beer money reunion, but in WWE... Even though, they're both older, but you can't tell me that Beer Money wouldn't be a good addition to the tag team division. They're not doing anything with Bobby Roode and James Storm. We know Triple H has had interest in him before. Why not? Right? I mean, Ziggler and Roode are not a team anymore, it looks like. So why not get the old band back together? I mean, I know they were a TNA team, but still. Doesn't mean you can't put them together in WWE. DHV Smoking Trees. I don't want Sammy to get kicked out of the bloodline just yet, in case we get War Games at Survivor Series. Drew with Brawling Brutes against the bloodline. So Drew McIntyre, Sheamus, Butch, and Ridge Holland against the bloodline at Survivor Series. Unlikely, because they'll probably want to have a championship match. But also unlikely because it'll probably be Raw versus SmackDown. So unless the draft happens before then, you know, that would be a SmackDown match. I don't see that happening, but I think that would be a great match to do. Doesn't even have to be War Games. You know, it could be a traditional Survivor Series elimination match. It could come down to Roman and Sammy on their team, having to fight off the babyfaces. James Cooper with the $4.99. Thank you very much, James. Donovan D. $9.99. Rank in order best live fans. New York City, Montreal, UK, and Chicago. Well, I mean, it's tough for me just because I would love to be actually in each market to be able to feel what it's like to be there. I've been to plenty of shows in New York City. I have not been to any shows in Chicago, the UK, or Montreal. I have been to Chicago. I have been to Montreal. I have never been to the UK. I would say best live fans. I would go... Man. I might go... UK, Montreal, Chicago, and then New York. I might actually put New York last. Yeah, I think I might. Joseph Brooks. Is it safe to say that the summer is not a very kind season to CM Punk? In 2011, his white-hot push was halted due to Triple H. In 2022, halted by injury. This was supposed to be the summer of Punk. It ended up being the... what would we call it? We have to come up with a different name. The something of Punk. The end of Punk? I don't know. I don't know what you would call it, but this did not turn out the way that he was hoping. Samoan fan, where has Bobby Roode been? We just answered that. So thank you, Samoan fan. Fire Panda dropped a huge super chat. Fire Panda outshined everybody on the stream so far with that $100+ super chat. It ended up being $108 US. He says, here's what I owe you for my SummerSlam prediction of Theory cashing in being wrong. I wanted to ask kind of a weird question. If the day should ever come where you no longer do the sound off, would you title your last podcast Solomonster Signs Off? I probably would. I think that would be an appropriate title for it. That's actually a pretty good idea. Hopefully that won't be for a while, though. The Bummer of Punk. I'm looking at all the suggested names in the chat. I think Hunter might have the winner so far. I like that. The Bummer of Punk. We go from the Summer of Punk to the Bummer of Punk. That's the winner so far. I like that. The Bummer of Punk. Fire Panda, though, thank you, man. That is awesome. Brumakian Productions, I am back watching WWE. Thanks, Triple H. Bossy of Steel, the Reigns of Terror is hopefully coming to an end. Boy, we are full of puns here tonight, aren't we? Dr. Dakota Scorpio, we got punked on Rampage. Boy, you guys are on a roll. Tyler, been watching you for a while. You are a great guy and fun to listen to. Keep it up. Thank you, Tyler. It's very nice of you. Especially after I tweeted something about... I saw Disco Inferno was trending earlier, and I tweeted something, as many people did. And boy, did all the brain-dead fools come out. All the mutants, they crawled out from under their rocks. Called me trash, called me all kinds of names. That's what happens, you know, when you get them all upset, you get them all riled up. They don't like that. When you talk about their heroes, they don't like that. Imagine having Disco Inferno as someone that you look up to. Jacob Donnelly with a $5 super chat. I'm turning 24 at midnight, which means I am close to 25. Which means I am getting old. Yes, you are. You are getting old. EJ Slemp, I'm going to all three AEW shows next week, and I think I am more excited for the Clash of the Castle card. I cannot believe I am saying that. I feel the same way. I'm actually really looking forward to that pay-per-view next Saturday. Rodimus Prime with the 10 spot. All this beef going on in AEW from Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa to Eddie and Sammy. Since when did Jerry Springer become all elite? I don't know, man. Tony Khan's got to put his foot down because this is becoming embarrassing. Every day, it's something new with someone else. Tomorrow, we'll find out that, you know, Claudio was walking down the hallway and fucking negative one stuck his foot out and tripped him or something, and Claudio uppercutted him into the fucking ceiling or something. I mean, it's like every day, it's something new. Oh, we have got Miles Marable with the $9.99. If the plan is for Cody to come back and win the Rumble, would you prefer him come out at number 30? Or have Seth enter number 1 and Cody return at number 2 and have them both outlast everybody with Cody winning? I wouldn't have Cody come out at number 30. If anything, I would have him come out between 25 and 30. He doesn't have to be number 30 because I would want him to be in there for a little bit. I wouldn't hate it if he did it the other way, though. You have them come out 1 and 2, they go at it, then they have to outlast everybody, it comes down to the two of them. I think that could work too. I kind of like that idea too. But if you're going to have them come out late in the Rumble, it doesn't have to be 30, it could be 27, it could be 25, it could be 23. But I think having Cody eliminate Seth, like it's Seth that he eliminates to win the Rumble, would be poetic justice for, you know, what Seth did to him on TV the last time we saw him. Temjin Zephyr with the $5 super chat. The Gunter Sheamus standoff while Butch and Ludwig reminded me of the Tanahashi Moxley segment with all the random chaos, except this one was better. Yeah, because that one just went on for way too long. I think they were trying to stall and stretch for time on TV, and it just got really awkward. This one, you're right, this one was very similar to that, but I think that was the problem on the AEW show. They had so much time left to kill, they just stood there for so long. It was like, okay, we get the point, like enough already. Oofman Entertainment with the $5 super chat. A match with four women's tag teams gets only 3 minutes. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Yeah, that was a Vince McMahon thing that Triple H did tonight. Not a fan. Cerulean Capuchin. Could a winter of Triple H be the end of AEW? Now, AEW will be fine. AEW is not going anywhere. But they definitely are having some issues and some growing pains right now. Kyle Murray, thank you for the $9.99, Kyle. Appreciate that. Drew Johnson. Ho, ho, ho. Open the phone line. I used to open the phone lines all the time and people got all pissy, so we stopped doing it. But you never know. You never know. We may take calls every now and then. Anti-Ambishop 07 Black Label Pro on IWTV featuring Warhorse and Eric Steven tomorrow night. Plus House of Glory on Sunday. Indie fans represent. All the best. Solomonster. And he says, like, comment, and join. Throw up the too sweet for the sound off. That's right. Listen to Anti-Ambishop. He knows what he's talking about. Lord Frieza. Haven't heard from Lord Frieza in a while. I love right back to you, Lord Frieza. I appreciate that. Why did they get pissy? Why do you think? Because they're wrestling fans get pissy about everything. Wrestling fans complain about everything. It's what they do. It's in their DNA. Bash. I can't speak for everybody else who dislikes Disco, but you know, whatever it is about him that I don't like has nothing to do with AEW and has everything to do with the fact that he's just he just has awful, terrible takes. And I still remember the worst one of all is when, he went on this whole thing about how Brody Lee's widow and the family, they have to come forward and tell everybody what's going on and they're not being transparent. I'm like, who the fuck are you? Like, the fucking gall of this guy. That's when I knew the guy was a fucking clown. And absolutely nothing that he says should be taken seriously. He's a fucking idiot. Shaquille Oatmeal, would you say that 22 is Seth Rollins' best year pre-ACL? I think you mean post-ACL. He's having a hell of a year in the ring. Absolutely. And Shaquille says, buy, sell, rent. Best alternate entrance music. King of Kings for Triple H. Glass Shatters for Stone Cold or Hollywood Rock. Appreciate the content. Hashtag Summer of Solo. Yeah, it's the Summer of Solomon. We're having a hell of a month on YouTube. We got a few days left. We're going to end this month on a high note. I love Hollywood Rock's theme. That Hollywood Rock with the guitar riff. Oh, what a great piece of music that is. EJ Slemp, I visited the Field of Dreams today on my last day of my trip. It's an amazing place. Field of Dreams is probably my favorite baseball movie. What is yours? Rookie of the Year. Rizzo with the 10 spot. I hope the new rumors are true that they are moving the draft until after WrestleMania. Allegedly, of course. Yeah, things are in flux right now as far as the draft is concerned. I know Fightful had that report about the draft being eyed for post-WrestleMania, which is really where it should be. Now it's a case from what I'm hearing where that may not necessarily be the case. It's just kind of up in the air right now. But to do the draft after WrestleMania, like within the first 2 weeks after Mania, is exactly the right spot to do it. Now, I thought this year they would want to do one sooner because Triple H might want to shake up the rosters to make it his own. But in a typical year, a draft should happen in the weeks after WrestleMania, not before Survivor Series. That never made sense to me. You do it after WrestleMania, almost like the season resets. The rosters reset. You get a fresh start. You start the cycle all over again, and then you build your programs throughout the year so that when you get to November, if you're still doing the brand supremacy stuff, at least it makes more sense because the people who are on Raw and SmackDown after however many months it is at that point, 9 months or whatever, might actually have some sense of brand loyalty depending on what brand they're on. So to do it after WrestleMania always made sense. Super Pony with the $4.99. What do you think of the idea of Drew McIntyre winning the titles of Clash and vacating the WWE title and having a tournament for it on Raw? Why would he vacate the title, though? That would be my question to you. If we were sitting in a booking meeting together and you proposed that idea, I would say, okay, why? Why? He's competing for the Undisputed Championship. Why would Drew McIntyre want to surrender the WWE title? Or why would WWE want him to surrender it? Now, the answer may be as simple as the networks, they want their own titles. USA wants a champion back on their show. Then you've got to come up with a reason to explain it. But, Drew McIntyre, if I'm him, I'm not going to want to ununify the championships that I just won. So, yeah, they'd have to come up with some kind of explanation as to why they're doing that. Him just coming forward to vacate it wouldn't make any sense. It would have to be some kind of directive from WWE management. And, this is not what I want, but this is how it has to be, and, whatever. Because I'm sure USA does want a champion back on their show. Darth Panic, can we get an F Disco super chat? We've got a Disco one that pops up every now and then where he gets bashed in the back with a chair. I think by La Parca. It's one of my favorite super chats. KD with the $20. I'll chip in a super chat to get the Be the Booker segment. We all love that here. I don't know, man. It's not looking good. Fire Panda, thank you though, KD. Fire Panda, hey, Mr. Monster, do you watch Reliving the War on Wrestling Bios? If not, you should watch it. He goes over the entire Monday Night War. It's about to hit Royal Rumble 98. I lived through the Monday Night War. I've heard about the Monday Night War. I've watched so many documentaries on the Monday Night War. I am all Monday Night Warred out. But no, I have not seen the series. I'm not familiar with it. Aha, look who it is. It's I Smoke a Lot of Weed with the $1.99. Bray should smoke a J and come back as the Friend. Well, isn't that what Bray was when he wasn't the Fiend? He was basically the Friend. That's just normal Funhouse Bray. Now, I think if Bray comes back, I think he probably will want to reinvent himself. Come up with something totally different that he hasn't done yet. Some kind of new character, a new look. Yeah, the Fiend, I think the Fiend is done. I do think he'll end up back there, but I don't know. I can't just see him going back to the Fiend and just doing that again. I mean, it's played out. They soured me on the Fiend. The Attitude Era is all mythical, but it had a ton of problems as well that people overlook. Yeah, of course it did. You know, of course they had, it was not a perfect era, but as somebody who went to plenty of Attitude Era shows and plenty of Attitude Era Raws, and you know, it really was like a party atmosphere every week. And to have the stars that they had at the time that they had them, Austin and Rock on the same roster at the same time, and you had Triple H and The Undertaker and Foley, and then they got Kurt Angle, and they brought in, you know, even more people, but the roster they had was just so fucking great. You can't really replicate that, you know? I mean, it's just kind of a moment in time that I think if you were a fan during that time, and if you went to the shows and you watched it every week, you remember how fun it was to sit down in front of the television at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock and to put the TV on and watch wrestling. It was appointment television. I missed that. But was it perfect? No, of course not. There was a lot of crap in the Attitude Era. I go back and watch some of those shows occasionally, and there was a lot of shit on those shows. I mean, some of the stuff on those shows was like, oh my God. Believe me, it wasn't all perfect. I don't know if anybody is claiming that it was. Joshua Edwards just won a Drew McIntyre card. Can I get a W? A 1-for-1 Drew McIntyre card? I don't know what that is, but congrats. Well, I'll tell you what, BlissFan is nothing else if not consistent, because BlissFan has been saying for weeks now. In fact, I think BlissFan last week said that he would put money on it. That's how confident he is that Bray Wyatt, as the Fiend, is going to interfere and get involved at Clash at the Castle. I don't see it. I don't think it's going to happen. BlissFan is convinced that we are going to get Bray at Clash at the Castle. Now, I would ask BlissFan, how is it that you are so confident? Are you just thinking that WWE has had this story in mind for so long, it's 2 years, that their long-term storytelling is that great, that they've just been waiting for the right moment to bring Bray back, and they're just going to resume the feud with him and Roman Reigns, or is this just a gut feeling that you have? Joshua Edwards says 1-1, or is it 1-for-1 or 1-1? Says that it is, one made, a trading card. Yes, but what brand? Is it Topps or is it some other company? That's what I was asking. Is it a Topps trading card? And he says, good stream tonight. Thank you, Joshua. We have got Fire Panda. Salamasa, you have to watch the Reliving the War series. He goes really in-depth into the war. I'm all about the war. I will check it out, but I'm all about the war. I know all about it. I know all about it. In fact, I went back and talked about a lot of it when I did the This Week in History segment for that entire year. So I have covered a lot of it on my own show. Dead man walking. Look who it is. It's our friend Kevin Dunn. They fired the one person. During all those waves of mass releases, they let go of the one person who was being trained to be his potential replacement. Somehow that person got fired, got swept up in the wave of releases. I wonder how that happened. So now they have nobody to replace him. So we're stuck with him. Rizzo, I see Bliss fans' point. That would be great long-term story if Bray costs Roman the title. Yeah, but you know what? After 2 years, Roman loses the championship because someone interferes and costs him the title. I just think when the time comes, and it may be next Saturday, when the time comes that Roman gets beat, he needs to get beat straight up. Whether it's McIntyre, whether it's Cody Rhodes, whether it's somebody else, he should be beaten straight up. So much time has gone by. I mean, such a long dominant reign, it would almost feel cheap for it to come to an end like that. Let John Moxley know that Kevin Dunn is here. Hey, John. Hey, Mox. Kevin Dunn's here.
Fuck Kevin Dunn.
See, I knew he was going to say that. I knew he was going to say, he's off in the corner. I don't want to bother him. I try not to bother him during the streams. He's over in the corner. He's doing something. I don't know. He's bleeding all over the place. Leave him alone. He's always in a bad mood. Leave Mox alone. And Joshua Edwards, WWE switch from Tops to Panini. Is that a real company? Panini? I didn't know there was a card company called Panini. I like Paninis. Haven't had one in a while. All right. Have a good one. I'm out of here.